BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie, and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. And today I have the pleasure of introducing once again Gretchen Robertson, who is an integrative psychotherapist. And if whoever hasn't listened to her last podcast that we recorded, please do, as it's absolutely fantastic. So today we're going to be focusing on skin of colour with a focus on depressive symptoms and how to support. So welcome, Gretchen, once again.
Thank you so much for having me again. I am really chuffed to be in this environment with you, virtual environment, and speaking to you nurses out there. Thank you.
Fantastic. So I know we've talked about, you know, support mechanisms in the past, but this is more focus on how in skin of colour it can represent quite differently. I know you've done a huge amount of work, Gretchen, on this. So can you explain a wee bit more to our listeners the focus on skin of colour and how it may differ?
Of course, absolutely. So I'm going to first talk a little bit about my practice. So I have had a background of working with people of a variety of backgrounds, orientations, just worked with all sorts of human beings. I'll put it that way.
A good way to put it.
Yeah, just a lot of different types of ways of showing up as a human. And I was really fortunate to work with a brand that really had a lot of focus on skin of color because of some of their actives that were really revolutionary in focusing on how skin of color responded to these actives. So I was able to understand a little bit more about a variety of skin concerns and diagnoses and how it both presents differently. So I'm thinking about things like eczema, where it can lead to PIH, or when you're treating something like melasma or acne, where someone will may experience these dark marks because of the inflammation. And then we started to look at the DLQI and how this really impacts quality of life. So I saw that this fit with my experience of working with people of color with mental health support, with anxiety and depression, but the recent studies going back to 2022, how these groups of people with a variety of darker skin tones from all over the world will respond uniquely based on their cultural sort of upbringing and cultural influences. They will present differently for the depression. So I didn't want to go into lots of different ways that skin of color impacts mental health, and then looking at, you know, anxiety and a variety of other things. We're just going to really focus on depression here because it's very, very interesting. It's interesting to me. I hope it's interesting to you. So hopefully that answers that.
That's fantastic. Yes, it is. It's really interesting. And it's what you're saying about culture and diversity. It's not all sometimes just the focus on the actual skin colour. It's the religion. It's the way different people are brought up. I mean, being Scottish, I'm was brought up differently maybe to someone in England, you know, so it does vary very, very differently. And I think it's great to have that focus. You mentioned the DLQI there, which I think our listeners are very, very familiar with. Most of us would use a DLQI in practice, assessing quality of life. Is there any other tools that you would recommend, Gretchen, or any tools you've come across in your research and background?
Of course. So we, you know, we have PHQ, as you well know, where we're looking at, again, how it's impacting your sort of day to day life. Are you able to organize your laundry? Are you able to do shopping? You know, this sort of thing. So there's a variety of questionnaires that can be presented. I'm not sure, and this is where I might need your help, Tina, where that comes in a nursing context as opposed to, let's say, a therapeutic context. Are there, is there an opportunity to bring in like a PHQ to just kind of have a look?
Absolutely. We sometimes use PHQ 9. We use the GAD scales as well, yes. 7, or possibly even condense it down to 2. So you've got the specific 2 questions for anxiety. We use, more popular now, I'd say, the HAD scores, hospital anxiety and depression scores. And that's
linked very much to our bad beer, the register for our biologics and JAKs. So, you know, we have focus on some of these tools, and I think, you know, they work well in some situations, not well in other situations. So again, time challenges, the usual, you know, challenges that we all face within our 20-30 minutes consultations. We can't be doing all these questionnaires. So, you know, it's really interesting for me as a nurse and a clinician to understand, you know, how even skin of colour, diversity, religion, upbringing would actually alter these factors when I'm, you know, actually assessing quality of life in our patients or if they've got any psychological problems. You mentioned some of the research that you've done in the background of this as well. Can you be a bit more, you know, to explain to our listeners about the research that you've done?
Lee, I think the one thing that's really standing out is you were mentioning religion. So one of the really interesting pieces came from the British Psychological Society. They produced a paper back in October 2022, and they were looking at how South Asian individuals respond with depression. So what does it look like? What's the attitude? And there's a wealth out there. So there's a lot of resources, particularly on South Asian communities, even on mind.co.uk. It's worth kind of having a look. And what I found, which was particularly interesting, is where obviously depression can have its stigma. And I think maybe in general European society, I know it varies. I mean, I don't want to overgeneralize anyone. There is a sense of isolation. But what was found in these studies was specifically with South Asian communities, that there's a double isolation because sometimes it's difficult to express depression within the family because the context of depression also can link to spiritual aspects. So it could be about, rather than approaching it as like purely a biological concern, you know, you feel depressed because this has happened. It could also have a link with maybe requiring to reach out more for faith, more for a religious solution or a spiritual solution as opposed to purely support with the biological interventions such as taking, let's say, an SSRI or that sort of side, which means potentially it may not show up in the way we score because culturally it may not be seen as acceptable to change one's behavior on your day-to-day management of things. So you're going to seem more or less okay from the scoring perspective, but you're not necessarily going to express the depression or present the depression in the same way someone outside of that culture would. I hope that kind of, what I mean to say is, more simply put, is there is an expectation within the community, an expectation within the family, which maybe appears to have more of an isolating experience for the individual. And to resist against that, they may potentially mask more or demonstrate maybe a different type of symptoms and also seek a slightly different solution or attribute the change in mood and presentation to actually just needing more time from a spiritual perspective. This was what was in the study. But I also find it interesting from the perspective of, let's say, the Black community. And this is a separate study, which was done in NYU. The first one I mentioned was obviously British. The second one here is from the US, from the NYU College of Nursing. And this is what really got me interested as a person of color myself. So they were saying that within sort of African-American and Hispanic communities that their expression of depression was very different to what was showing in sort of more traditional description of depression. So with these communities, it was more about exhaustion, irritability, anxiety, coping behavior, pure sleep, like coming home and climbing into bed and really shutting down. But generally during the day, presenting more or less normally. So again, on one of these questionnaires, it may not pop up the sort of questions that we're asking. So we may not recognize depression, even though it's there. Two very different ways of being depressed in, let's say, the South Asian community and the sort of African-American community, which I would say would possibly filter from my experience here in the UK as well, where both will present more or less functioning, maybe moderate to low functioning, but maybe not picking up on the level of depression that they're truly experiencing at the time.
That's really good points to make. And I think, you know, talking about how we are expected to present ourselves, or, you know, families can be very, very tight knit. And, you know, I've had patients say to me, you know, I can't express how I feel, or I can't come out because of my background and my religion. And it's very difficult. My families would be ashamed of me, even, you know, to say that I have some weakness, even. You know, I've had these words come out to me when patients are in my consultations. I work in a very diverse area, and it's very difficult as a clinician, isn't it? It's something we really, really need to think about, as in, you know, every person can present with anxiety and depression or other forms of psychological disorder, but it can present so differently because of backgrounds, or because of culture, or because of this diversity. And it's a really important point to make, because we still use the same assessment tools for everybody.
That's right. And this is the thing. And it was a fascinating piece to kind of uncover here. I was looking at another article in the BMJ that we don't necessarily create questionnaires or support or even training. Even myself as a qualified psychotherapist, we didn't have specific training for cultural sensitivity, although there are lots of books out there that one can read. But in some ways, I think even they don't necessarily cut it quite specifically as lived experience or the opportunity to volunteer or to work within communities, so that you start to understand, first of all, in the Venn diagram, where we all connect as human beings, and secondly, where we have areas of potential for curiosity. So my thoughts around this as a psychotherapist, but also thinking about it from your perspective as a nurse, so sitting in the room with someone, is to be able to use unconscious communication and body language. So what is the vibe you're picking up from someone? Are they giving a little bit of a, like you mentioned, they can't come out, they can't speak. There's probably something about you, Tina, that you're so warm that, like, they probably kind of maybe let you see a little bit more of this vulnerability. But if there's any sense of like, oh, maybe it's not safe for me to say this, or I don't want this to show on my record because I don't know necessarily how this is going to impact me, or how it's going to show up on my family if you say that I have depression. I just, you know, I'm fine, everything's okay. Giving some examples of how somebody might feel in a clinical setting. It's important to pick up on that body language. Like, are they sitting there with closed body language? Are they covering things up as they're speaking? You know, covering up the marks, or using lots of makeup to protect themselves so it's not necessarily shown, or they're mentioning that they're sleeping a lot, or they don't really have a lot of interest in anything outside of the home. You know, they seem just to give you the indication that maybe something's not quite right, but they're not fully saying it, if that makes sense, because it might not show in the types of questions that they're filling out on the document. So it's having that whole person approach.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, some of the things that you said resonates with myself. It's that, you know, having that eye contact as a clinician, not to face away from that patient, make them feel that they can speak to you as well. And also, like you say, it's little snippets of, you know, when I've had people that are really closed down, it's that, you know, what do you like to do, or something even more specific, like if it's a younger sort of person, have you seen anything on Netflix recently? So just little snippets, isn't it, just to go around that sort of quality of life questionnaires we have, so it's picking up on little bits, but trying to get a wee bit more from them, or landing on something that they really want to speak about and talking about that Netflix series. But then, you know, then we can ask a bit more specific or build that relationship up slowly with the patient, and then they'll be able to speak to us a bit more.
Because it is a very important thing to remember that depression is very, very serious.
Yeah.
And one of the things that came out of this study at NYU was that it was less likely in this study for these Black and Hispanic individuals to have depression, but more likely to have severe depression. So it would be sort of a jump to severe depression rather than having something more of a moderate. So although it's not necessarily obvious in the sitting with someone, because they might just come across as a bit irritable, maybe they've got kind of low energy, low libido, but generally speaking, they seem kind of okay. They're getting everything they need done. But what you don't see is behind closed doors that they are shutting down at the point that they're going home. And this study really sparked a load of articles. So there's lots of information about how we can support these groups of people by recognizing where they really are, as opposed to looking at them as they are, as opposed to not under the sort of blanket non-specific view of depression.
Absolutely. And I think as well as clinicians, yes, we are strict for time. Yes, we know signposting can be very difficult. You know, we have limitations. But I think sometimes we've got to give ourselves a bit more credit to say, sometimes even listening to a person, you know, having mm-hmm. that eye contact for them to be able to actually speak about something that maybe they've never said before, just makes a massive difference to that person when they walk out that room, doesn't it?
It does. I think it's creating, number one, congruence. So they know that you're there with them and that you've got some sense of empathy and you're listening and you're really present and that they can trust you.
Yeah.
Because that is a huge piece, that what they know is being in that room, speaking about things that are less visible than the skin, is sacred, and that is trustworthy and it's confidential. So they understand that this isn't necessarily going to have an impact on how they're viewed by their family, their community, because that means that that relationship between nurse and patient is all the more valuable to them. So they're more likely to be compliant with the guidance that you give them, whatever you're prescribing. They're going to really believe in what you're offering because they'll believe that you believe in them. That makes sense.
It does. It's the trust, isn't it? It's building that trust relationship is so important, and things that we might do naturally. I'm sure most of our listeners do this quite naturally, and, you know, it is so important. And I'm sure, you know, as nurses, we have that compassion built in. And, you know, it's so important for us to remember, you know, to look at that patient, to be warm, to have time for them. And also, a big point that you brought up earlier, you know, when skin of colour patients maybe have hyperpigmentation, we know this happens a lot more in skin of colour. It's looking at this, isn't it, and discussing this with them, and also respecting that person, because sometimes, you know, you've also got that covering up of skin. You know, people are uncomfortable about stripping off, and, you know, we as clinicians sometimes can forget that. We, you know, expect patients just to say, right, come on, let's have a look at your skin. And it's just having that respect and taking time with them. And you know, privacy is obviously should be built into everybody, but just remembering these little factors that can make such a difference to religion and how this person is expected to present themselves.
And honestly, this is so beautiful to remember that piece about privacy and cultural experiences around how one shows the body, but also just their interaction with their own families. Their own families might not know quite how profoundly their skin's been impacted with hypo or hyperpigmentation. So no one may have seen it. It's very possible that they're covering up to everyone and anyone. So you may be the only other person, apart from obviously other clinicians, that has seen it. And again, this might be the kind of pressures on a family around relationships and marriages and being presentable and eligible within the community for the representation of the family. So this is another piece around cultural differences in terms of presenting as whole and worthy of respect within a community, which also this is where it impacts on depression, because they're going to want to maybe not show that there's anything wrong. So you're so fortunate to be in a position to help someone become closer to the person that they want to be.
Absolutely. And it's so important to remember. Absolutely. And do you find, you know, working in your role as a psychotherapist, do you find people with skin of colour find it more difficult? Do they find it more difficult to open up? Have you recognised that when you're seeing people in your appointments?
I think in my experience, I've worked with a variety of different types of people. I mean, all different backgrounds from all different parts of the world. And I would say, yes, I think in different communities, number one most important thing, I'd say as a general, going across Asian and South Asian, as well as within the African diaspora, confidentiality is really important. And knowing that it's a safe space, that they can be themselves and to really put aside all of the expectations that have come from outside that room. Because I think that that's something I think we all experience as human beings, but to a varying degree. So some communities have a lot more autonomy and they can be whoever they want and it's okay and they can say what they want. But in some communities, that's just not even thinkable, even as a full adult. So confidentiality is probably one of the most important things, not making assumptions about someone's culture based on something I've read or experienced with just one or two people, but actually being very, very curious to understand what their experience is as being that particular type of human. I think recognizing that their experience of criticism or family expectations may sound very different to other groups. So my own personal experience, so not to judge that. So what is an expectation of their family isn't necessarily wrong, but it may be different to my experience. And then it's important to find out what their relationship is with that particular way of viewing the world in terms of, you know, particularly around gender roles and what's very normal for women to do versus what men are meant to do. That's one thing that can often be a little bit confusing. Perhaps I think working with different groups at the moment, and just to touch on it lightly with all the things that have been recently happening in the news, across the country, I think this is coming up more and more, particularly with people who've had, let's say, PTSD experiences, post-traumatic stress disorder. I think there's a little bit more of an uptick in need for mental health support. So I've noticed I've been doing a lot more additional sessions lately. And I think you might see that if you have any patients coming through the door now that fit within skin of color, that there may be a slight change in the way that you're interacting depending on what's been happening at home or happening with family. This is front of mind as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you touched on this earlier as well, Gretchen, about education for us, because that is an issue, isn't it? You know, it's so limited. And I know we're doing a lot of work with Skin of Colour, and Skin of Colour Training UK have been fantastic. And, you know, we're trying to get images for skin assessment and all these things, which is fantastic work. But, you know, we have to even strip it back further, isn't it? And learn about, you know, cultures and diversity and religion and, you know, embrace that person, you know, and not have this judgment, you know, go in there quite open and gain this person's trust. And I think that's where we fall down. We just haven't got the education. And if we don't work in a diverse area, then it's even more limited.
Exactly. It's so important to ask open questions that are more coming from the, and I think if you're feeling it in your heart, like, I really want to help this person, you know, are you, you know, are you okay? Like, how do you really feel? Like, I see your, you know, your scores are pretty okay here, but I'm sitting here with you and I'm kind of picking up that maybe you're a little bit sad about this. You're feeling a bit frustrated with how the treatment is going. You know, how are you really feeling? Maybe asking, you know, do you ever wonder about, you know, are you able to tolerate this? You know, are you ready to go, you know, through this acne treatment? Do you feel comfortable with it? You know, is it frustrating you? Is it making you feel sad? Are you picking at your skin because you're a bit anxious about it? You know, just to kind of respond to the feelings that you're having while you're sitting with that patient so that you are fully there. And if you recognize it in you, in your intuition, in the body language, in what we call in psychotherapy the unconscious communication, finding a really soft way of just asking, because that's not on a piece of paper, that's just a communication. So that might feel slightly more okay to share than having it officiated on like on a piece of paper that's in file somewhere. But I also wanted to touch upon a couple of really great resources. I don't know, I think maybe among the nurses listening today, there might be a few that could be considered under the banner of Skin of Color. And there's some great support services out there, but one of them was called Pink Scrubs, if anyone's heard of them. And this is developed for the Filipina and Filipino communities, of which there are 40,000 working here in the UK. And there is a list of marvelous mental health support and resources there to actually support individuals who might be experiencing this. Because I realize, although we're talking about skin of color in terms of your patients, maybe somebody might hear elements of themselves here as well, where you just don't want to show quite how tough life is at the moment. And that there is actually something out there to help you.
That's great. And I think that having looked at that website, it's absolutely fantastic. It's such an important resource, isn't it? So again, just to go over that name, Pink Scrubs. And
yeah.
And you mentioned, is there any other sort of signposting that you could provide for our listeners today?
So let me just get here. So I have Mind has some really great materials, specifically looking at a variety of communities and what it looks like for those communities to experience depression or anxiety. So any kind of recent studies and people with their own testimonials, as well as a support network of a variety of sort of counseling and psychotherapy services. There's also like I said, there's the Pink Scrubs, which also has the Royal College of Nursing has a helpline. There's obviously Your Good Services. You know, you have some fabulous offers of resource there. There's also, I'm just looking here, I think it's called BetterHelp.
Okay.
This is great, as well as the counseling directory. If you wanted to find culturally specific psychotherapists, psychologists, and counselors. Again, I know that I love to say these are all the things that are free. Unfortunately, it's very difficult on a free service to only provide particularly culturally sensitive therapists. Sometimes you get lucky and you do find people. But generally speaking, if you want someone with a particular background and real mental health training in that particular area, you tend to have to go on something like Counseling Directory, I would say, is a excellent place to go. And like I said, BetterHelp is also great because it's an international platform, so you get a variety of people there. And as I mentioned, BDNG and the wellbeing resources there too.
Oh, thank you, Gretchen. Thank you. And that's great. You know, some really good helpful resources there for our listeners. And I think it's remembering the key points that you've said in this podcast. You know, We know we've got the challenges, but it's the little things that count, you know, listening to that patient, the body contact, be aware of the, you know, the sort of how they are presenting themselves, having that respect, confidential, you know, privacy, just having all these little things that we're talking about that can make such a difference. And to pick up on a point there that you made beautifully was the fact that, you know, these DLQIs, yes, we know they're not perfect, but it's a validated tool that is used, you know, worldwide, really. And it's picking up on the DLQI. It's not just a case of ticking them boxes and putting it to the side. It's a case of looking through the DLQI sometimes, looking at the scores. And this patient might be presenting very confident, you know, very happy. But when you look at the score, it can be very high. And then it's talking through with that patient, isn't it? It's being able to do this.
Absolutely. Looking through the scores. And also, even if the score isn't that high, checking with them, because some individuals may want to present to you that they're doing really well. They may not even want to admit to themselves that things aren't quite right. So if there's any sort of inconsistencies also in the way that they're marking, maybe question it a little bit just to double check what's really going on. But trust your gut. Mm-hmm. Like I said, in this study from NYU, the diagnostic criterion for depression doesn't exactly meet how it presents in this particular ethnic group. And the same with the Asian community. It's not matching exactly. So we might not pick it up simply by doing some of the questionnaires that we're providing. Or it might be something that you just have more of a feeling about. And you haven't done the questionnaire, but it might be worth just being curious a little bit. And that support might actually be what they really need to turn a corner.
Absolutely. And, you know, little things, we're not going to change everything, but little things matter. And, you know, as we said, you know, just even for that patient to open up slightly can make a massive difference. And I think it's always questions we get asked, Gretchen, you know, where do we guide our patients to, what can we do for our patients? But the differences you can make, just small little differences, can, you know, build those mountains, build those relationships, can't they?
Oh, it's so important. I mean, I can think of myself personally many times sitting with a nurse and having a conversation, and it could just be the fact that someone looked you in the eyes and smiled.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just the eye contact, it's the body language, you know, I actually care, you know, that just changes that sense of feeling alone. And this is what we're talking about, particularly in that study from the British Psychological Society, about feeling isolated, but not just isolated as just an average kind of, oh yeah, I feel a bit isolated, I'm down, I'm definitely feeling depressed, but compounded because of the impact it has both in community, family, as well as the wider society too.
Fantastic. So Gretchen, as always, you're always so wonderful to listen to, and I could listen to you most of the day easily. The great news is we have more podcasts planned with Gretchen, which is really positive. And I know Gretchen, having known Gretchen for a lot of years now, is so supportive of nurses and quite a familiar face at the BDNG conferences as well. So we're always very, very happy. She puts a smile on our faces when we see her. So thank you, Gretchen, for this really good information. For our listeners out there, just before we close this podcast, could you just run very, very quickly over the ones that you've mentioned, Pink Scrubs, and just give the key sort of websites for our listeners to delve into and have a look at?
Absolutely. So thepinkscrubs.com, I'm going to share this also, so hopefully it will be in the comments of this podcast. There's also the Royal College of Nursing helpline. There is, for you nurses out there that may recognize yourself in this, there is the employee assistance program that will be connected with any of your particular health environments that you're working in. There's the personalized helpline specifically for Filipino NHS staff. I just want to share that. There is a specific number that you can speak to in your own language, which is on that website, Pink Scrub. So I'm not going to call out the number now. There's also the wellbeing app that you have with BDNG, is that correct?
We have some wellbeing on our on our website, and we're also, we've created a psychosocial webinar, but also possible regional study days in the future, so we'll watch out for that as well. So, and we also, we try to focus on the well-being of our staff, so it's fantastic that our listeners today have been writing articles on how they do the well-being, which can vary from cold water swimming to climbing mountains.
That sounds amazing. And there's one other thing, there's Mind. Mind is a fabulous website. It can also be drilled down to your locality, the specific, you know, the specificity around what type of group of person that you're interested in finding support for. And then that will give you a wealth of options. And it's just a great resource just to have there with you. And it's just literally the word mind. You just type that into Google and it will come up with a load of resources for you.
So that's fantastic. So we can't change the world. Sorry, Gretchen, was there another one there?
Oh, there was one last one, just a tiny little one. The last one was called BetterHelp, and that is a therapy platform that you can find a therapist right then and there. And the last one is a counseling directory.
Fantastic. So there's quite a few in there.
There's a lot of options.
Yeah, and I think as you open up these apps, you know, you sometimes find more that's more relevant for yourself as well, which is really positive. So we know, you know, we know the background is there. We know that we've got a lot of education ahead of us, that we need to be more, you know, we need to improve. We know that. And even the experts in skin of colour training, we know, we always say, you know, we know we need to improve our aspects. But I think for our listeners today, it's that important factor that you have got this special time with your patients. You can help even in a little way. There is some resources out there, which is definitely worth having a look at. And sometimes just these little differences can make such a difference to that patient. Being recognised as a person and not just a piece of skin is quite often said. And I think it's just going back to the basics sometimes, you know, the eye contact, the body posture, picking up on small cues from your patient as well. All these things our listeners will be doing naturally, which they should be taking credit to themselves as well for. So I want to say a massive thank you, as I said, to Gretchen for this wonderful podcast again. If there is anything that our listeners today would like to have some more details about, please just email myself at the BDNG and I will definitely put you in touch with Gretchen. As I say, the great news is Gretchen will be around for more podcasts in the future, and always a smiley face at our conferences. And thank you, listeners, for listening to this podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.